Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's stand up and tee off in Mauritius, the island nation in the Indian Ocean, located about 2,000 kilometers off Africa's southeast coast. That's where South African golfer George Coetzee is getting ready to defend his title at the AfAsia Bank Mauritius Open Tournament. The action will take place at the Four Seasons Golf Club at Anahita. Reporter Mark Tompkins joins us now from Anahita with this preview.
Back in September, George Coetzee broke his ankle surfing in Bali. After 5 months out, the South African is finally getting back to his best and hopes to defend his title here in Mauritius that he won over the Heritage Golf Course 12 months ago.
Unfortunately, I haven't been back since the win, but I've been looking forward to the trip for quite a while. The golf course is quite different to the previous one, but definitely looking forward to the challenge.
Would you say this is a typical Ernie Els design course? And if so, what features stand out for you?
I wouldn't say it's typical Ernie Els. He usually designs golf courses that are a little more wider, but I suppose the fairways are quite wide, but there's not that much rough before you get to the out of bounds stakes. But the greens and the runoffs from the greens, that if you look at kind of the way Wentworth's redesigned and a couple of the other courses that Ernie's done, it's definitely has that little bit of an Ernie taste to it.
So you're working hard on your short game. Do you think it's going to be crucial out there getting up and down in order to be in the mix again?
Yeah, I think that's probably the key this week is, well, obviously you got to keep it in play off the tee, but the greens are quite small and tricky to hit, and I think if you can chip and putt well this week, you'll do well.
You won in a playoff last year. Any particular memories that kind of spring to mind being back in Mauritius about that day, about the event, about the week?
No, I remember it very fondly, almost like it was yesterday. Every shot almost leading up to the playoff and in the playoff, and I had a really good week, and I'll cherish it forever.
Key moments on that final day?
It's hard to say because it was kind of an up and down run. I started off quite hot out the blocks and made a lot of birdies early on. And I remember making a double bogey on 7, which kind of put me back and made me play a bit more defensive, which kind of changed the way the tournament was going to play out for me. But obviously the tee shots in the playoff and on the final hole of regulation was quite crucial. And obviously hitting the green, I think the first playoff hole I hit like this hook 4-iron off a slope, which I remember, it was probably one of my better shots of the week, and almost holding the putt for eagle. But just lifting the trophy is kind of the cherry on top, obviously.
The wind, it's definitely going to be a factor. How much of a factor will it be, and is there anything you can do to try and counter it from a golfing
perspective? No. I think all of us are going to have quite a tough challenge on our hands this week. If the wind keeps blowing like this, I know they've had a couple of smaller events here that they've played, and the winning scores have been under 5, under par, and I don't think it'll reach double figures if the wind's like this. I think we'll even do well to stay under par.
This year, we've moved around the coast to the Four Seasons Golf Club at Anahita, and with several players still trying to secure an Olympic place, there's a twofold reason for doing well this week. One of those, Jaco van Sail, has said his season starts here with some disappointing results so far after finishing a career best 21st on last season's race to Dubai. Korea's Jae-hoon Wang, who beat Nacho Elvira in a playoff to win in Morocco last week, has also made the trip, as have Clement Barrado, Chris Hansen and David Dixon, who all made the top 10 in Rabat. The high winds will play a massive part this week, but whatever happens, the only tri-sanction event will be a great spectacle on this paradise island.
Mark Tompkins reporting from the Paradise Island of Mauritius. Now let's go to Italy, where Swiss tennis star Roger Federer is through to the last 16 at the Rome Masters Clay Court Tournament. Federer defeated German teenager Alexander Zverev in straight sets 6-3 and 7-5 on Wednesday. However, there are now question marks about whether Federer will play his next match. He said he has been struggling with a back injury and felt like he would lose on Wednesday.
Cautious, but extremely happy. You know, I was expecting to lose in straight sets today. That was the mindset going in. So to win in straight is actually a really big surprise to me because I played cautious and I only decided after the warm-up that I was actually going to play. So for me, it's a big match on many levels in terms of information looking ahead for the next few weeks. Regardless if I'm going to play tomorrow or not, this was something I feel like I needed to do to get a sense of where I'm at.
Roger Federer also talked about his decision to play on Wednesday.
Well, I felt it was the only logical step for me to go to the next level was to play a match. I could have just, you know, skipped it and just kept practicing, but then also still being cautious in practice. At least if something happened today during the match, I still felt I had enough days to recover again for Paris. And if I get through it, I feel like the upside and the confidence and what maybe I can do from now till the French Open is going to give me much more than if I wouldn't have played. So it was a calculated risk, if you like. So I'm super pleased that I was able to play, let alone to win. So for me, it's a big day and huge step in the right direction.
It might be a huge step in the right direction, and Roger Federer might be super pleased, but he also thinks he can't win the Rome tournament.
Would be wonderful to win, but not this year, because it won't happen. Well, let's talk in a few days. I'm too far off. I'm so far off that it won't happen. But of course, maybe next year, maybe sometime down the road, I don't know. But I would have loved to win it. Unfortunately, it never happened. So I'm just happy to be playing again in the tournament this year. But the goals are more realistic this year.
Swiss tennis star Roger Federer speaking in Rome on Wednesday. In other results from the Italian capital, world number one Novak Djokovic of Serbia beat Frenchman Stefan Robert in straight sets 7-5 and 7-5. And British star Andy Murray eliminated Russia-born Mikhail Kukushkin, who now competes for Kazakhstan. The score, 6-3 and 6-3. Murray, by the way, says he's looking to add to his coaching team after announcing a split from Emilier Mauresmo. World number three Murray paid tribute to Mauresmo's work. Richard Conley reports from Rome.
Murray said that his relationship with Mauresmo had worked, that she'd helped him rebuild his confidence and improve results. They began working together in June of 2014, with Murray winning seven ATP World Tour titles in that time, including his first two on clay. It was a source of regret to both, Murray said, that he hadn't won a major title in that time. Mauresmo's family commitments meant the pair had only been able to work together for a 10-day period in the 3 months since the Australian Open, and that both agreed that wasn't enough. Murray is working with former British Tour player Jamie Delgado, but may still add to his coaching team in the near future.
The Voice of America. VOA. They're playing basketball. We love that basketball. The National Basketball Association playoffs continue later Wednesday night with games in Toronto, Canada, and Oakland, California. In Canada, the Toronto Raptors will host the Miami Heat in Game 5 of their best-of-seven second-round series, which is tied at 2-2. And in California, the defending champion Golden State Warriors are at home against the Portland Trail Blazers. The Warriors lead this series 3-1 and will advance with a victory. I'm sure Golden State star guard Stephen Curry will get more than a few cheers this evening. On Tuesday, Steph became the first player in history to be unanimously voted the NBA's most valuable player. It was the second year in a row Curry has won the trophy. Should Curry and the Warriors win tonight, They'll next play the winner of the series between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the San Antonio Spurs. The Thunder storm past the Spurs in San Antonio Tuesday night, winning 95-91. Oklahoma City now leads the series 3-2 with Game 6 on Thursday night in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Russell Westbrook, let's give him a Sunny Side of Sports shout-out. Russell had 35 points, 11 rebounds, and 9 assists for the Thunder in Game 5, while Kevin Durant added 23 points. It marked the second time in the series that the Thunder has won in San Antonio. During the regular season, the Spurs lost at home only once. Meanwhile, the Women's National Basketball Association, or WNBA, tips off its 20th season on Saturday. To commemorate the anniversary, ESPNW and ESPN the magazine have published special stories about the league. Allison Overholt is the editor-in-chief of both publications. I asked Allison, do you see future growth for the WNBA in the United States and other countries?
It's a good question. I can't speak to their growth goals because I'm not privy to their, you know, business plans, but women's basketball globally is, again, another area that's been, you know, almost more advanced than it ever has been in the United States. It's funny. I think last year, was it the 15th or the 20th anniversary of one of my favorite movies of all time called Love and Basketball? And, you know, it's an interesting storyline in that movie that all the players, when they finish college, they go and they play pro overseas. So, you know, that's sort of my notion of where the women's game actually, you know, had more traction and was more exciting for a long time prior to the launch of the WNBA here in the United States. So, you know, when I was in high school, I would come to camps in the States in the summer, and I would hear the girls from college teams talk about how they are going to play pro in Greece or in Spain or in Italy or in, you know, in China. And, you know, that's continued to grow. It's continued to be a thing, you know, even now where you have situations like Diana Taurasi playing professionally in Russia, and they actually paid her $1 million last year to sit out her WNBA season because they wanted her to save up her energy to play for their pro team. So it's an interesting challenge for the WNBA. They're in an exciting moment right now. They're turning 20. They've got, you know, a lot of accomplishments to be proud of. But arguably, the game is more advanced in other countries. So if they want to expand internationally, it'll be interesting to see how they evolve in that direction.
Are there one or two memorable American sports moments involving women that really stand out for you?
Oh, sure. I would imagine those moments are probably different for everyone, depending on what formative stages you were in your own life and where those sports moments intersect. So, you know, for me, being a kid in the early 80s, watching the Nadia Comaneci TV movie over and over on repeat, you know, I would probably say that my first great women's sports memory is Mary Lou Retton in the 1984 Olympics. You know, I remember jumping around my living room like a crazy person when she was doing her floor exercises and watching her vault and thinking she was going to fly through the ceiling, and then that huge smile. So that's probably my first women's sports moment. You know, when I was in college the summer the WNBA started, I went to an LA Sparks game for my birthday with three of my high school friends, two of whom had been high school teammates. And for us, it was less about a particular sports moment and more the fact that that league had started. You know, the idea that girls could start to make money playing basketball just felt like everything had changed when we got to see that. And then probably, you know, once I finished college, I remember watching the 1999 Women's World Cup. I was in my first apartment in Washington, D.C., actually, where you are.
Okay.
And, you know, it was one of those little basement apartments. I don't even think I had cable. I was watching the game on this tiny television and just, you know, screaming my head off when that team won that game. And so it was very interesting to remember that when we were working on Women's World Cup coverage last summer here at ESPNW and, you know, watching the entire tournament and then seeing the U.S. women's national team reclaim that title last summer and actually being a professional teammate with Julie Foudy. You know, there was a moment where I sort of sat back and I remembered watching her win the World Cup, and I just sort of shook my head and I said, you know, man, how is it possible that I'm teammates with Julie Foudy now here at ESPNW? And I remember watching that game and just thinking, you know, she was the greatest thing in the entire world.
Brandi Chastain, one of the heroes or heroines of that 1999 Women's World Cup. And she recently came out, Allison, with an interesting story about she's going to donate her brain after she dies for study, medical purposes.
We had coverage of that on ESPNW.com, and it's a really important story, I think, because in all of the coverage of concussions, brain trauma, the links with sports, it's been really crucial to have smart reporting on that, you know, over the last few years. But that's an example of where women have largely been absent from the storyline. And in fact, there's a tremendous amount of research out there that, you know, women can be at times more susceptible to concussions because of, you know, differences in physiology and different ways that, you know, the female body responds in particular situations in soccer particularly has been highlighted, you know, as a place where we should be looking a little bit more closely at what the protocols are and what training regimens are and what we need to know about keeping women athletes safe. So with all of the attention and the spotlight on, you know, football and concussions, there's an important piece of research and coverage to be done on the effects of brain trauma with sports like soccer for men and women, but really remembering that it's important to have women in that kind of research and as a focus of those kinds of efforts.
Allison Overholt is the editor-in-chief of both ESPNW and ESPN, the magazine. Allison, thank you for chatting with us on the Sunny Side of Sports.
Thanks for having me.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Joining us once again on the Voice of America is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Good to have you back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Wednesday?
Well, the big sports story here in the U.S., and really is a global sports story, is the Invictus Games. Now, this is 500 injured servicemen and women from around the world, 15 different countries, are gathering in Orlando, Florida for these games. It's actually created by Prince Harry of the UK a couple years ago. Of course, he was in the military in the UK, and after he retired, he said, let me do something for these injured servicemen and women. So we had the opening ceremonies the other day with Michelle Obama in Orlando. We had Prince Harry in Orlando, this huge opening ceremony that got a lot of attention on social media. And now the events are underway. So we're seeing some of those athletes competing. But really, you know, a great testament to how resilient they are. Some of these men and women fighting overseas or serving in their militaries who have been injured in various ways, competing as athletes. One of them, Sarah Rutter, is an American. She is now the most decorated Invictus Games athlete. She has 7 medals. She lost a leg in the September 11th attacks at the Pentagon. She was actually being promoted to Lance Corporal, and during her promotion ceremony was when the attack happened on the Pentagon. So she is, you know, even though she is missing a leg, she has a prosthetic leg. She runs in the 200-meter race. She's won, I think it's, you know, several gold medals, several silver medals. So congrats to her. She's one of these success stories. But we're seeing a lot of these great success stories being highlighted on social media.
Andrew, you mentioned First Lady Michelle Obama being at the opening ceremonies in Orlando. The First Lady, a big sports fan, just like her husband, President Obama. If I remember correctly, she was also at the opening of the Special Olympics last year in Los Angeles. So good to see her at these international sporting events.
Absolutely. It's been great to see President Obama and Michelle Obama lend their support to a lot of these events like the Invictus Games. In fact, we talked about it on the show, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, the kind of funny back and forth between Prince Harry and the Obamas. The Obamas sent a video saying, bring it, we're going to, you know, our athletes are going to be there. And Prince Harry, you know, brought in his grandmother, the Queen of England, and she said, oh dear, you know, kind of laughed it off. So they had a nice little social media back and forth with these little videos, but it really is great to show their support for this.
Do you see the Invictus Games growing in terms of countries represented?
Oh, absolutely. I think, and as you mentioned, the Special Olympics, I think we've seen that with the Special Olympics. It's certainly grown over the years. It's being covered now on ESPN, which is the big sports network here in the United States. Other sports networks around the world are covering it. I think we're going to see the same exact thing for the Invictus Games. It's going to grow. There are going to be more participants, more people involved lending their support, and we're going to see more coverage of it as well, not just on traditional media also, but on social media.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see a story about Sierra Leone soccer player Alhaji Kamara. He has joined DC United, the Major League Soccer club based right here in Washington. And the author of the story, Stephen Goff, the Washington Post soccer writer, says it's an interesting acquisition by DC United because Kamara comes with a heart history. He's had heart problems during his career. And Steve writes that it comes at a sensitive time in the soccer world. In the past week, two players have died of apparent heart attacks after collapsing during a match. They were Cameroon's Patrick Ekang and Brazil's Bernardo Ribeiro. Stephen Goff writing in the Washington Post. Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, the National Football League here in the U.S., the American Football League, is taking games to the United Kingdom, to Mexico City. They're thinking about possibly going to Germany in 2017, China in 2018, and 2019 could bring Africa, could bring American football to Africa, at least as far as Ezekiel Ziggy Ansah is concerned. Now, he is a Ghanaian NFL player. He plays for the Detroit Lions, and he's come out and said that the league really needs to consider doing some games in Africa. He said there's a growing groundswell, really, of support for football in Africa. There's growing interest, and he really is pushing for the continent to host some football games, hopefully in the next few years.
I encourage our Twitter users in Africa, if you're listening to the show this evening, maybe check in with your input on whether you'd like to see the National Football League maybe stage an exhibition game or a real game in Africa. And once again, my Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports, at VOA Sunny Sports. Send me a tweet on what you think about that prospect. Interesting prospect,
yeah.
Andrew.
And I'm fascinated to hear what the listeners think, because the NFL has been looking to do this over the past few years, expanding into London especially. They've been doing a series of games every year in London. I think they're up to about 4 or 5 games in the season now that are done in London. And they're looking to go, you know, they were in Mexico City previously for a game. They're looking to go throughout Europe. And so it really is becoming, even though it's the National Football League and it's the American style football that goes on here in the U.S., it's something I think they want to take all over the world. They sense a growing interest, certainly, you know, throughout Europe. And then, as Ziggy Ansah says, he thinks that that's growing in Africa as well. So, I mean, yeah, I'm really interested to hear what everybody thinks out there. If you think that this is a good idea, you know, they've talked about in London eventually maybe putting a team in London and having, you know, there's a lot of logistical questions about that. They'd have to fly back and forth. But maybe there's, you know, a growing, you know, interest in having a league in Europe, or, you know, in addition to the National Football League, you have a European American Football League or an African American Football League. There's a lot of just questions and interest that's being generated from this on social media, a lot of talk about it, which I'm sure is Ziggy Ansah is excited about, because this is his idea and his thought. So he's, I'm sure, glad to see a lot of people talking about that. And who knows what the future will hold? We will see.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny.
And that wraps up the May 11th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff, and thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Although the fight for political freedom is a universal challenge, three African nations, Burundi, Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Republic of Congo, experienced a significant increase in human rights abuses related to their elections in 2015. Burundi's human rights climate took a turn for the worse in April 2015 when the ruling political party, the National Council for the Defense of Democracy, Forces for the Defense of Democracy, announced that the incumbent president, Pierre Nkurunziza, would run for a third term, which he won in July 2015, in violation of the Arusha Agreement. Human rights monitors have documented at least 474 individuals killed since April 2015, including 130 targeted assassinations. Other serious human rights abuses linked to the political crisis include extrajudicial killings, arbitrary and politicized detention, often in inhuman and life-threatening conditions, and widespread government disregard for the freedoms of speech, press and media, assembly and association, and sexual and gender-based violence. In the Republic of the Congo on October 25th, the ruling Congolese Labor Party and its allies won a landslide victory in a referendum to amend the constitution to allow President Denis Sassou Nguesso to run for a third term. 35 civilians were reported killed during demonstrations leading up to the referendum, and voters faced intimidation and severe restrictions on basic freedoms. In January 2015, political tensions intensified in the Democratic Republic of Congo when protests erupted in Kinshasa, Goma, and Bukavu over a push by President Joseph Kabila's presidential majority for electoral legislation mandating a nationwide census that would have delayed presidential elections past 2016. The United Nations Joint Human Rights Office confirmed 10 deaths, while Human Rights Watch reported 38 civilian deaths, 5 disappearances, and more than 300 arrests during the protests. Additionally, there were numerous reports of opposition members arrested in cities across the country. Abuses have continued to increase. The UN has stated that it has documented more than 400 cases of human rights violations, including 52 arrests since the beginning of 2016. In all three cases, the United States has expressed concerns for these trends both publicly and privately. Universally, it is the primary responsibility of the state to address human rights abuses through accountability and prevention. This is a challenge all over the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss politics in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests discussing politics in DRC. That's next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve these
nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever.
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.